This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast here on Seminole Sports Radio. This is Jason Staples. Once again, before we get started, as a reminder, you can find me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can also subscribe to this podcast through iTunes or your podcast manager of choice and listen to this podcast on Seminole Sports Radio from VSporto. And listen on your mobile devices through the Seminole Sports Radio app available on iTunes or the Android Marketplace. And of course, if you are enjoying this podcast, please rate the podcast on iTunes. Give us a 5-star rating. That definitely helps us out, moves us up the rankings a little bit. And tell a friend. The more listeners we have, the better. And again, we also have our Facebook page, the Unconquered Podcast, on Facebook for those of you who are out there listening to this podcast on a regular basis. Lots of stuff to talk to talk about again today. This is the second part of our National Signing Day, post-National Signing Day analysis, looking at Florida State's class. Lots to talk about yet again. Tons of players in this class that we talked already about some of the additions in the last episode. Wayne McGahee from NoleDigest.com and I talked about some of the new additions to on National Signing Day, the guys that signed after committing on National Signing Day. So that would be Carlos Becker and Shavar Manuel and Brian Burns and Dontavious Jackson, Landon Dickerson and Juwan Williams. Those all being additions on the last day as Florida State closed with a bang. And again, if you haven't heard that episode, you can go back and take a listen to that in terms of what we talked about. Otherwise, now we're going to go ahead and talk about the class in general and where these players fit in terms of the bigger picture, in terms of what each player brings to the table in this class. And once again, I'm joined by Wayne McGahee III, Trey McGahee from NoleDigest.com. We're breaking all of this stuff down, evaluating the 2016 Florida State National Signing Day Hall. Florida State with the consensus number 2 class in the country to Alabama. I don't think Florida State would trade their class with Alabama, particularly given that Florida State got the quarterback that they want. And this is the best line of scrimmage class in the country without question. It's the best offensive line class I think that's been landed in at least the last 2 years nationally, going back to Bama's class from a couple years ago. And I think it's a better class than that one, and probably the best class Florida State's landed on the offensive line going back to at least 98, and it might be better on paper than that one was. And then you look at the defensive line class, and it gives that class a run for its money as well. So this is not only a number 2 class, it's harder to have a top-ranked class when you have 2 kickers and a line-heavy class, because linemen tend to be ranked a little bit lower than a lot of the skill guys, so it's easy to see, you know, who's better in here and there. This is a line-heavy class with 2 specialty guys and a fullback prospect that still finished second in the country. To me, that makes this the best class in the country. And what distinguishes it more than anything else, there are 2 words that come to mind. One is depth. This is a really deep class. There's no fat in this class. Nobody that you look at and you go, well, he ain't ever going to start. You know, if he ever starts, we're in trouble. You know, that's not, there's nobody that you really think about that way. There's some guys that may never start, but there's nobody that you look at and go, he doesn't belong. And then it hits every need Florida State had. So it's depth. And then the other word that strikes me is versatility. There are a lot of players in this class who can do a lot of different things. So that, you know, if this guy wins this job, then this kid could move over here. There's a lot of that in this class. Let's go ahead and talk about where these kids sit. So if we think about, I like to divide classes into sort of tiers about where kids can, where kids sort of fall in that basically out of have any given class, you hope to get, you know, maybe 10 starters out of a 20-some player class. I think they got more than that. I think they got 14 or 15 starters probably out of this class. But then you really need difference makers. So I like to tier these classes based on where these kids fit up front. Right off the bat, where do I project this kid to fit potential wise? So I go impact players. These are guys who could potentially contribute day one if the depth chart needs it. This is a kid who could step on the field and can play at a championship type level as a freshman, contribute and make a championship level team better as a freshman. So a difference maker from day one. That's an impact player. Then you have a potential difference maker who's not quite ready to play right away. You don't anticipate immediate contribution from day one with this guy, but in 2 or 3 years, this guy is a potential first or second round draft pick kind of player, guy who, you know, defensively makes splash plays and so on, offensively changes numbers on the scoreboard, you know, that sort of thing. Then you got outstanding starter. Then you got depth. This is the kind of guy you don't want to start down the line, but you're bringing in because he's a body. And then you got specialty guys. Those are the tiers. So all that said, we now turn to Wayne McGahee III from NoleDigest.com. So from what you've seen, and you've talked to the coaching staff, you spent the day in the war room with the coaching staff, who do you see out of this class as impact players?
I mean, you have to start this conversation off with Lavonta Taylor. He's going to make an impact day one as a punt returner. He'll find a way onto a field in the secondary somewhere. I'm not sure where he's going to start, where he's going to play, but he's going to find his way onto the field. The guy's just, he has that type of mentality. He's not going to be denied, and he has the ability to back it up.
He's the Derwin James of this class, if we want to think about it that way. Derwin was a guy that we were saying the same thing about. This is a guy who, he's going to find a way onto the football field to make a difference from day one. Now, there is a difference. Derwin James was an early enrollee, which means that he was able to learn the secondary stuff and get into the flow of things as an early enrollee, and over the summer could rep what he already knew. That makes a big difference in terms of being able to contribute in the defense. Lavonte's not an early enrollee, so that's going to take some time. But the difference is he's a Greg Reed, you know, Tyrann Mathieu type punt returner. And Florida State hasn't had a good punt returner since Greg Reed, really. So that's going to be an immediate impact, I think. And from what I understand, the staff really is looking at him as a star more than an outside corner, looking at him in the LaMarcus Joyner role in this defense going back to 2013. And I think he starts in that position in 2017, probably gets some time by mid-year at the star position next year. Thoughts on that?
I don't disagree. He's going to find a way to get on the field. They're not going to be able to keep him off of it.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to beat out, say, Tavarius McFadden or Marquez White for one of the outside corners, though. So that's where that star position comes in. And particularly when you're playing against teams like UNC with a Ryan Switzer in the slot, or a Clemson with Artavis Scott, you're going to need a guy who can run and who can be fluid as a corner in the slot to defend those guys. And I think by the time Florida State plays those teams, that's when we'll see Lavonta Taylor in that spot. Next on the list.
He's going to find a way to get on the field. Yeah. Next on the list, you've got Malik Henry. And he's an early enrollee. He's on campus right now, and he's going to make his presence felt in the race for the starting quarterback this year. So,
yeah, I know they're excited about him.
Yeah, with Sean McGuire out for the spring, and it's pretty much going to come down to DeAndre Francois and Malik Henry for most of the reps. It's going to be interesting to see if he can come in and win the job after, you know, being on campus for just, what, a couple months. But he has the ability to do it.
Yeah, I mean, he's unusual. He's one of those unusual high IQ football players, which is why I think he's deserving of being in that impact player role. I think DeAndre is a little bit more physically gifted. He's a little shorter than Malik, but DeAndre, you know, has a little bit more of a gun. But Malik just seems to have it when it comes to the kind of touch and anticipation and ability to process that you want in a quarterback. And let's be honest, with what Florida State has coming back, the quarterback just needs to make sure he doesn't throw the ball to the other team. just put the ball on target and get the ball out and manage the game and don't turn the football over. Just be competent. And next year's team is going to be in the hunt. So, you know, I think Henry is capable of that. Now, the question is, can he beat out DeAndre Francois? And if he can't, then, you know, you think about maybe redshirting him so that he's got a couple years after Francois moves on to be the starter. But either way, I think Florida State's in good hands at the quarterback position. After that, I think you can make a debate, but let's go ahead and talk about Wally Ime.
I'm a big fan of this kid. I mean, he's huge. There's no other way to describe it. He's 6'4", 305, 310 pounds. He moves well. He's an early enrollee. He's got 3 years to play through. He's a JUCO kid. And he's going to have the opportunity to come in and be right in the rotation. I mean, he's got the ability to do it. And being an early enrollee, he's going to have the time in the system to be able to make an impact.
Yeah, I think there's a real shot that he winds up being in the two deep in that rotation. You know, I think this is where the defensive tackle position is going to be interesting, because you got Nadi, who's going to be the starting nose. And Christmas, who probably steps into that starting defensive tackle spot, the three position, that three technique. But then after that, you got some questions. You know, Fred Jones was the backup nose last year. You got Arthur Williams behind him. You got Darvin Taylor, who redshirted and the staff really, really likes. You still got Keith Bryan on the roster. And then you got Ime. And I think those guys are all going to be competing for those two spots, those rotation spots. And I think Florida State's going to rotate six guys in regular rotation this year because of the number of experienced bodies they have. The question is just going to be who's going to get basically starter minutes. And I think they're going to rotate those starter minutes almost 50-50 between the first and second string. And I think Ime is going to be in the mix for that second starter kind of role.
But, I mean, I agree. I think he's going to be a very good addition. It's a little sweeter because at one point in time he was committed to Miami.
Yeah, nothing like stealing from your rivals yet again. Beyond that, I think the other guy that you could consider an impact type guy, and I wavered on this. I think there are four impact guys in this class. You can argue about the fourth one. I think Landon Dickerson is a potential impact player. He's not going to need to be because the offensive line has so many guys coming back. But he's a kid that could come in if the need was there. He could come in and I think contribute day one as an offensive lineman. Obviously, you want your linemen to be able to start only a little bit later in their career once they're more physically and mentally ready. But I think he goes in that mix as well. We already talked about him a little bit earlier. So let's go ahead and move then to potential difference makers. And these are the guys that they're the high ceiling guys that need a little bit more time to develop. But, you know, 1 or 2 years from now, these are the core of potential championship runs. First guy on that list is one of your favorites.
I do love me some Janarius Robinson. I've seen him play a few times. And while he is very raw, there isn't a kid in the class that works harder than he does. That's why I feel like he's going to be great. He's got a long way to go. He is a very low floor, but he probably has the highest ceiling of anybody in this class, regardless of where they committed.
Now, I think Henry could be potentially a top five draft pick, you know, in terms of ceiling. But I think, you know, just because it's a quarterback position and quarterbacks, you know, anyway. But leaving Henry aside, I agree. I think Robinson, looking at him physically, looking at what he could do, I mean, he could be a 270-pound end with
Lawing's somehow Lawing thinks he's going to get to 280.
Yeah, that may be a little bit of a stretch. I think that may be coach hyperbole, but either way, let's say he gets to 270, which I think is well within range for him. He's doing that with unusual burst. I mean, this is another kid that just flies off the edge. He's got to learn, and Lawing brought this up, he's got to learn how to bend a little bit.
Yep.
And with him, it's not a matter of physical inability to bend, which it is with a lot of kids. This is a guy who's just too raw. He hasn't learned, I mean, part of it in high school, he didn't have to, but he hasn't learned how to dip the hip and get that knee up underneath him and get the leverage to bend the edge and get up underneath the pads of offensive linemen to turn that corner. He has the capacity to do it, though. And he's got to just develop that. And that's where Lawing being there is really important, because DeMarcus Walker couldn't do that when Lawing got to campus. And all of a sudden, we saw him start to do that some this year. And Janarius is a much better athlete than DeMarcus Robinson, or I'm sorry, than DeMarcus Walker, mixing their names. Janarius is a much better athlete than DeMarcus Walker, and it's a matter of time before he learns to do that. And that's when he becomes a real difference maker and the kind of pass rusher kind of end that that Florida State hasn't had in a little while. Next on that list after him, I've got Keith Gavin as the next real potential difference maker on this list. Kid I really like. I felt like he was a must get in this class for Florida State at the wide receiver position. I don't think he's an immediate impact guy, partly because he hurt his shoulder, and we're going to see exactly how quickly he comes back from the shoulder injury in the state title game. He's going to have to, he had surgery with that. And partly because, you know, he was really raw. But wow, the upside there is tremendous.
Absolutely. I've seen the kid play six or seven times this year. And he's got great body control. He has great hands. He's a fantastic athlete. He's going to struggle a little bit with the route trees. That's not something that he's been asked to do before, but he's going to be make an impact at some point during his career. I don't have any doubt about that at all.
Yeah, and I to me, the comparison, I've brought this up before, is Mike Williams from Clemson, where, you know, he's a vertical kind of guy that, you know, anything up over his head, he's going to be a weapon. That, you know, down the middle of the field on post routes and dig routes and that sort of thing. Big kid. He just gives you another component. And pulling him from Bama is going to matter, because I think he's going to be a factor in that game in 2017 when they open the season. Anyhow, let's go ahead and move down the list. I've got next on the list, Cedric Wood. I think Ced is underrated.
Ced's very underrated. The issue with Cedric is that he didn't camp. He didn't do anything after he committed to Florida State. I mean, he literally played his high school ball, didn't go anywhere else, never took another visit, signed with Florida State, and moved on.
You know, who that reminds me of is funny, because he also reminds me of him when I watch his tape. He's a very similar prospect to DeMarcus Christmas. And DeMarcus did the same thing and came in underrated as a result as well, where, you know, he was a better prospect than his services rating, because he shut everything down, didn't go to the camps and all that. And I think both of those guys are very similar kinds of players coming out, where, you know, again, they're versatile defensive tackles who can both hold up against the run, but also really be explosive penetrators when necessary as well, as things move down. And this is a kid that's 300 pounds. So, I mean, he's as an early enrollee, he'll be in the mix. I think, again, 2017 is when we'll really start to see the most from him, but a prospect, again, I really like.
I mean, he's going to need some time. He's going to need to add a little lower body strength, but he's going to be a good one. It's Odell absolutely loves the kid.
Yeah, like, just like with Christmas.
Yeah, he's going to be a good one. It's a local prospect, you know, just never wavered, always wanted to be a Seminole.
Yep, doesn't hurt. After that, we've got Becker on our list. We already talked about Carlos Becker. Then we've got, and this is one we debated about. We talked a little bit about him already. This is one we debated about. I have him as a potential difference maker. You have him down the list a little bit. I think Shavar Manuel is one of those guys who is a potential difference maker. He's a guy, I think he may have the lowest floor of anybody in this class. He's a kid that, you know, for all we know, could be buried on the depth chart 3 or 4 years from now because he didn't work and didn't, you know, do what he needed to do to become a difference maker. But I also could see this kid, if things check out with his knee, which, you know, he had a bad knee injury before, you know, last year. If things check out with his knee, if things continue, if he keeps his weight in the right area, I think you're looking at a kid that has the kind of potential. He's not quite as good an athlete, but the kind of jumbo athlete that Florida State had in Mario Edwards, where you can put that kid out there as a run-stopping end with explosion who can do stuff that most guys just can't. He's got that kind of physical, that athletic ability as a jumbo athlete that not many people do. I have him there. You're a little more skeptical.
I am. If you had told me that Florida State was getting the Shavar Manuel from his sophomore days, I would have been ecstatic. He was a top five player in the country, hands down. Then he tore his knee up, and he didn't play at all last year. And then this year, he never started. He didn't start a single game his senior year of high school.
Yeah, but, I mean, he had the kind of knee injury that, you know, it takes a while to rehab from, and particularly in high school, you don't have the resources that, you know, Josh Sweat did coming in as an early enrollee.
The issue is that he was at IMG, a place where they do have those resources.
That's a good point. And again, that's going to be the question. Is he going to ever approach where he was as a sophomore? If he does, as you said, he was a top five player in the country, regardless of position, when he was a sophomore. Florida State's getting a kid with that kind of ceiling, I think.
Still, yeah, I just don't see him. After watching him with the knee injury, I mean, I'm just not convinced that he ever gets to that point. I'm also not convinced that he ever puts in enough work to get to that point.
Yeah, and that's going to be the real question. But again, the beauty of this is that Florida State has a guy with that kind of ceiling, that kind of potential scheme versatility. And, you know, again, you hope that he lives up to that ceiling. He may not. But either way, he's not on the Florida roster. And that's maybe as big as anything, because if he becomes that at Florida, then that's a nightmare to play against. And you hope he becomes that here. But either way, he's not going to be that at Florida, which is a big deal. Next on the list, your buddy, Dontavius Jackson. Some people might put him as an impact player. Florida State, I think, is set at linebacker. I don't think he's going to be, you know, Florida State's not going to start a freshman at linebacker this year. That just was not needed. But I think he may be in the two deep. He's a smart, smart kid, and that matters.
He is. I think that Florida State has the potential to start a freshman at linebacker. But I don't think it's Dontavius.
Yeah, well, I think if they start a freshman linebacker, it's Josh Brown, who's just as smart, and he's an early enrollee.
Yes.
And let's go ahead and move to Josh Brown, because he's another guy that you really like. I like a lot.
Yes.
Versatile. And this is where you start to get to a lot of the versatility. Manuel's one of those guys who could play inside and outside on the defensive line. Josh Brown is a guy who could play inside or outside as a linebacker. Early enrollee, early returns, early discussions about him from the coaching staff and such is that this is a kid they're just so ecstatic about, because he's so bright and he's a guy that you want in your locker room, and he's got the physical goods. He's going to have to gain a little bit of weight, but kid that's going to be really, really special, I think.
He's the most underrated player in this class, bar none, in my opinion. I flat out love the kid. He's a coach's son. He understands the game. He's smart. He's very athletic. as you said, he's an early enrollee, and that's going to make a difference this year, because Florida State still has a bunch of guys that are coming off injuries, and
Matthew Thomas. You
don't know what's going to happen with Matthew Thomas. So he's going to have a leg up on all those guys. And if Matthew Thomas somehow, you know, screws up again and gets, you know, booted off the team, Josh Brown's going to be the guy that rolls right into that role.
Yeah, and he's a guy that he's just not going to make many mistakes. And you could see that in the U.S. All-American, the U.S. Army All-American game. Guy was all over the field. And, you know, that's with the best of the best there. And he jumped off the screen. And yes, he needs to get a little bit bigger, needs to gain a little bit of weight. But Florida State is a scheme where, you know, he can fit really well. He's going to be protected by a high-quality defensive line. So, you know, that's a guy that, again, he can be a difference maker. And you could argue, because of him being an early enrollee, he could actually be an impact guy. I just don't think early on, you know, he's not the kind of impact guy that last year you had five guys that, you know, you could potentially put in that impact category, two of whom had huge impact, Derwin James and Josh Sweat. He's not going to have that kind of impact, but he's a guy that you know, could play a little bit sooner rather than later if, you know, say Matthew Thomas winds up finding his way out, or, you know, there are more injuries at the linebacker position. Either way, let's go on down the list. Let's quicken this up just a little bit. Bavon Johnson. Bavon is is the nation's top-rated center prospect. Didn't visit Florida State all that much because he's terrified of Trickett, as you were explaining on the Noll Digest boards.
Yeah, he – well, I mean, there's no other way to say that. He's a fat kid. he knows it too. He knows it. He's up to 350 pounds. He's going to have to drop a lot of weight, but he didn't come. He only visited Florida State twice this year, once for a game and then once for his official visit where Florida State provided him with a dozen cupcakes. Didn't make any sense. But, he was terrified of Trickett yelling at him because he was overweight, so he just didn't come to visit despite, you know, loving Florida State and having a Florida State tattoo. So,
yeah, this is a kid that, you know, even at 350, moves pretty well. But in order to play center at Florida State in the Trickett system, he's going to have to drop down to about 325, 320 area to really be ideal. But he's just so powerful. And, you know, he gives them something they haven't had at center all that much. Kind of guy that, you know, higher ceiling than even a Cam Irving or somebody like that. That kind of player who can just single block defensive tackles at that center position. So, you know, the hope is that he can come in and drop the weight and they can get that under control earlier because, you know, he's a guy that could compete for the center position by the time he's a sophomore. And no people out there. There are people who are talking about this. He's going to come in and start day one or, you know, early on or by mid-year at center. No, not going to happen. It's tough to do at center anyway. Kid needs some work to get there. And, you know, there's a lot of work to do. Plus Florida State, again, they've got guys coming back on the offensive line. Once again, you know, Eberle is, you know, he played well last year at center and he's going to be yet a year older and stronger and surrounded by guys that he's used to playing with. But by 2017, I think Bavion's going to be in the mix. Then we got Josh Ball, offensive tackle, 6'8". And Trickett was saying this kid was as good an athlete at 6'8 as he's ever seen.
He's fun to watch. He really is. He's a fundamentally sound. He's a very unassuming looking kid for 6'8". Like he doesn't like jump off the page at you when you're just sitting there looking at him.
And then you watch him move his feet.
But then you watch him move, and then you watch him block, and then you're just like, well, 6'8"'s not supposed to move like that.
Yeah, they basically have bookends in terms of their offensive line with where they sit. You know, Juwan Williams, more of a left tackle. Ball could play either one. You know, if those guys manage to develop the way that they could have two of the best offensive tackles in the country at the same time. After that, you got Brian Burns in the potential difference maker category. Josh Brown, we already talked about. And Keon Joyner, who... Keon's interesting. He's similar to Shavar Manuel in that his floor is a little bit lower because of some questions on whether or not he's going to last. You know, he got dismissed from his high school team due to some circumstances. From what I understand, there was a slap boxing situation in the hallway that got a little bit out of hand, and he was dismissed from his high school team. Seems to be a pretty good kid, though. And he's one of those guys that you hope you bring in, you get him out of Havelock, which, as you've talked about, is an armpit. You get him out of Havelock and get him into a good situation. And this is a kid that at one time was ranked a 5-star prospect. I think this kid winds up most likely in that Sam linebacker, Buck linebacker role that you see Jacob Pugh in. Moves a little bit better moving forward than backwards. But that kind of Jacob Pugh or Christian Jones type prospect is where I see him fitting. What do you think? I know this is another guy you really like.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of him. I believe in his ability to cover a little bit more. I think he could play both inside and outside. I think he could excel as a buck, but the problem is that Florida State has brought in so many kids that can play the buck this cycle. you know, Burns, Brown, Joyner.
I think of those guys, though, Burns and Joyner are more likely to wind up there. Brown's probably a little bit more likely to wind up inside, but who knows? And the thing is, they can put two of those guys out there.
It's a good, you know, issue to have if you're Florida State because there's so much versatility there.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. And the thing is, that means you can put more of those guys out on the field. You can put three of those guys out on the field, and you don't know which one's going to come. That's the thing. So, and by the way, that's 12 guys that we've marked as potential difference makers in this class. Which, you know, I've got lists going back to 2011 in Florida State's classes that we've got 4 guys as impact players, 12 guys as potential difference makers. The most that we've had in either category, 2011 and 2012, we had 6 guys as impact players in both 2011 and 2012, but nobody, there's never been a class with more potential difference makers or as many potential difference makers as this one. 2011, there were only six potential difference makers in that class. There were only four in 2012, and three of them busted. One of them left for to become a track guy, Marvin Bracey. Oligwe was dismissed, and Chris Casher is Chris Casher. So, you know, that there were only four in that class. So the depth of this class with guys that could be championship-level players is unusual. The closest is the 2014 class, which had 10 of them. And, you know, and the interesting thing about that 2014 class is there's only been one guy that's moved on from that 2014 class, Kane Daub. The rest of that class is still on campus, which means 3 years in, you've got Dalvin Cook and Roderick Johnson and Derek Nnadi and Kareem Arr, and all those guys are there. That attrition that you normally would expect hasn't happened. And then you put that class together with this one and the 2015 class, and all of a sudden you see why things are so optimistic for 2016, 2017, and 2018. My goodness. So that's 12 guys that we've got listed as potential difference makers. Run down the list of outstanding starters, guys that could be outstanding starters potentially. That's sort of where their ceiling is. Mike Arnold, big kid, going to be an offensive guard more. I know you're a little bit skeptical of his impact. I think he's more just a road grader type that they could put in there. I'm not sure that he winds up a starter necessarily, but he could be. And again, if he keeps his weight down, he's a good enough athlete, and he's a rare kind of size guy, 6'6", 340 plus, that, you know, he could be that kind of road grader inside. Then there's Amir Rasul, and there's some differing opinions on him among people who've watched him. What are your thoughts on Rasul, running back prospect?
He's interesting. I watched him in the Semper Fi All-American game, and
he's better
his
than
first touchdown really stood out to me.
Yeah, me
it
too.
Was only a 3-yard run. I mean, it wasn't some like Dalvin Cook bounced off 16 defenders and, you know, ran 200 miles to the end zone. Dalvin Cook run. It was the 3-yard run, but he took the ball, made one cut, and was just gone.
It's the burst, the explosion, that he showed.
I mean, just it was a sharp cut. Found the hole and exploded through it.
And the tackler in the hole bounced off him. That was the other thing that stuck out to me. We knew the kid was fast, but that ability to jump cut and make one cut and get vertical and break a tackle was what we didn't know we weren't sure he could do.
I mean, it was not a great year for running backs. That was just
right
the way it was. But I think Florida State got the best one in the state of Florida.
Yeah, I agree. And again, this is a kid. They needed a kid who could be a good pair, a good sort of alternate with Jacquez Patrick, a kid that could serve as a sort of lightning to Patrick's thunder. And they got that. This kid ran a 10-400 meters. So, you know, for those of you out there, that's fast.
Hey, 10.38. Let's have a proper respect for decimal places.
Well, that was wind aided. I think his wind legal time is 10.44, but that's getting technical. Either way, that's fast. So I like this prospect better than a lot of people. I think he reminded me actually of Elijah Hood and his running style in what I saw at the Semper Fi game, which was really encouraging because it shows instincts to run in a zone scheme. And if he's anything close to Elijah Hood in that regard, and then runs 10-4 on top of it, you're looking at a kid who could be shockingly better than anybody expects. And that's ultimately, I mean, in a year where, you know, like you said, the running back situation, not just in the state of Florida, but nationally, was not the best group of running backs that we've seen come out in a while. Certainly not the 2013 class or the 2014 class. This is, you know, 2014 class, of course, being a class for the ages with Dalvin Cook and Nick Chubb and Leonard Fournette and that group, that being a really, really an unusually good group. Sony Michel, I mean, that group was incredible. This group had none of those guys. But then you get a kid that's 200 pounds, that runs 10-4 in the 100 meters and shows the instincts to potentially be able to run between the tackles, run in his own scheme. You get exactly what you're hoping for there. So once again, we're at a point where we're running up against time, and we still have more prospects to discuss. So we're going to get to those prospects in the next episode, where we're going to continue to talk about guys that I've got listed as starters or outstanding starters, but there are still a couple of them that you could argue could become difference makers down the line. So, you know, they're maybe not as highly thought of coming out, but they've got physical traits, just like, again, Amir Rasul does. We'll get to those in the next episode. Also talk a little bit about the specialists and wrap some of wrap our player-by-player discussion of the Florida State 2016 recruiting class in the next podcast episode. So that's going to do it for us today. And again, before we get out of here, just a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can follow Wayne at Wayne McGahee III. You can also follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio. And you can find us on find this podcast on Facebook at The Unconquered Podcast on Facebook. Make sure also to catch us on iTunes or through your podcast manager of choice. You can also listen to us on Seminole Sports Radio from vSporto or on your mobile devices via the Seminole Sports Radio app. Of course, give us ratings, 5-star ratings on iTunes. Tell a friend. Again, I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. Thanks for listening.
I made this.